big news. Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home. These are our best deals of the year. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
Oh my goodness gracious, I can't believe I am still talking about the Florida game, but I was on my dear beloved friend, my best friend in media. I go on a show every week, Mr. Blake Ruffino, NYS Sports. He was live and he was like, Carter, Jabbar Jalouk just got suspended, the Florida's running backs coach. And I was like, okay, what is that? For what? He was like, yeah, they caught him on video slapping one of our players. Okay. I am a believer in second chances. I am a believer in letting some things go. I am a believer in leniency. But it should be a non-negotiable to never put your hands on an opposing team's player. Like, he gets this 3-game suspension where he should lose his job. There are some things that are just, quite frankly, common freaking sense that you don't do. And to do it in our house, when Jabbar Jalouk has history in the state of Louisiana, he's coached here before, he should have respect for Death Valley. He makes $451,000 a year at Florida. $451,000. He's not that good of a coach. He's not that good of a coach. Teams do not win when he's on the staff. He is a running backs coach, but on top of that, he is an associate head coach. The name head coach is in his title. Jabbar Jalouk. Jabbar Jalouk. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. He still has a job today. What? If any LSU coach had done that to Florida, I would say the same thing. There's just some things you don't do. You just don't do it. And that is slapping another team's player. Pushing, I can get with pushing. I really can. Because if there's a skirmish and a fight needs to get broken up, I can understand pushing someone away and breaking something up. That is sometimes necessary. But slapping the face, it's really what got a lot of those pregame juices flowing between the two teams. So Billy Napier, not only is he a bad coach, he has all of this going on. Game before, you got a player spitting in the face of another player. We let that slide. But in the very next game, I would think a self-righteous human being, one that had any different type of rationality, would sit in front of his team and say, look, we have got to be on better behavior. But no, you display even worse behavior from your coaches and your players in the very next game. It's sad. I am so glad that we never hired Billy Napier as our coach. So glad. It is insane that he is not fired. It should be an easy call for Billy Napier. Now, I understand they're probably thinking about it and understanding what the buyouts would be and all those different things. You've got to cool it. Now, we say hi to Tony. We say hi to Jamie. We say hi to Brian. And this is also true. So when Blake brought it up to me, I was shocked, but I also wasn't shocked. Anyone that knows anything about him is this isn't anything new. I'm shocked he's even employed. He's not that good of a coach. So, you know, yeah, dude, I'm telling you right now, everyone always says, hey, offensive line coaches are a different breed. Y'all, there are some running back coaches out there that are just wild, flat out wild. But now I want to talk about LSU. So we should have, to me, the best SEC podcaster on the planet in about 30 minutes joining the show. And for me right now, LSU is not a top three team in the SEC. They're just not. They're not number one. I think that title should go to Georgia or Oklahoma. They're not number two. You can argue Georgia, Tennessee, or Oklahoma. And then at number three, I would once again argue Georgia, Tennessee, or Oklahoma. If you want to put Auburn there, if they do beat Oklahoma after this weekend, sure. But LSU cannot be ahead of any of those teams. And I'm a little shocked that the AP poll voters have not knocked LSU down at all because of the offense. Now, the defense, of course, is elite. We're the third best defense in all of America in adjusted EPA per play, which is really good, okay, as many of you could attest. We're also bottom 10 in offensive EPA per play. So that's not good. And, you know, college football is an offensive game. Is the defense important? You betcha. It is very important. There have been quite a few championships. In fact, the last two, where the defense was better than the offensive side of the football. Ohio State's defense better than their offense, even though that's close, and Michigan's defense better than their offense. So, yeah, I mean, you need good defense to win titles. It's just this is the worst LSU offense in a very long time. It really is that bad. But thank goodness for Monsieur Delane and Witt and Wes Weeks and all the studs, Dominic McKinley, Gooden. The list goes on and on, okay? But for me, I just can't get there when I was told off for not having LSU as a top three team in the SEC. They're my number four team. I think the top three are clear for me. I think that next tier is Auburn, Alabama, Texas A&M, LSU, okay? So that's fine. That's perfectly fine for me. Now, there were a few other things that Brian Kelly brought up in the teleconference, and this is a big thing that we are all discussing, if Garrett Nussmeier should actually play in this game versus Southeastern. The answer to that is yes. Well, what if he's not fully healthy and a week's rest would do him some good? Sure, but it's also kind of weird because you would have a bye week, essentially, for Nuss, then play Ole Miss, then you would have another bye week for him, and then you're playing South Carolina. It honestly just depends how hurt he is. If he really is dealing with pain and rest really would do him a whole hell of a lot of good, sure. But I discussed this privately with fans and so on, that maybe starting Michael Van Buren is good to see what you have. Right, there's something to be said about what you need to do at the quarterback position next year. Granted, this, of course, is LSU's second-to-last rent-a-win. They will have one at the end of the season versus Western Kentucky. But, you know, for me, I can understand the argument of starting Michael Van Buren versus Southeastern or Colin Hurley, whoever's won that true backup starting quarterback spot. But I do think this LSU offense does need repetitions. They need to show us that they can actually go out there and move the football versus a not so great team. And for me, I do think, I am not sure if the LSU offensive line can hold up versus even Southeastern. I'm serious. It's really been that bad. So we need to see some things. Okay, we need to see some things. I really do think the offensive line has performed that poorly. If we can't run the ball on Southeastern or put up more than 24 points, we're the only SEC team to not put 24 points on the board in at least one game, then we're in a whole hell of a lot of trouble. Okay? So, there you go. And then, obviously, Brad Davis is under a lot of pressure. Okay? The thing that's interesting about Brad is he was not one of Brian Kelly's hires. He is the longest tenured LSU continuous coach on staff. Obviously, Corey Raymond would clear him in terms of total years at LSU, but he was the lone coach holdover from the previous staff to where we are now. Now, obviously, Corey came back, but the truth is we need to see this unit dominate somebody. Show us something. The Clemson game was obviously a bunch of smoke and mirrors, and we shocked them with all the different screens and stuff that we showed them. Okay. Now, the next thing that I wanted to get to as far as LSU is concerned is the wide receiver play. All right. So, you know, this was a big thing as far as Chris Hilton is concerned. You know, it's been a wild year for Chris. Okay. And there was there's people questioning, well, why isn't he getting more targets and we really need him to unload this offense. And I do agree with those things. It's just you tend to overrate hype from time to time, considering he was a top 100 recruit. He's been with us for so long. He was with the Brian Thomas and Malik Nabers recruiting class. He's fast. He looks like an elite wide receiver, but this has always been true to a certain degree, is players will normally show you who they are in the first 3 years of their career. Normally, through three seasons, we can see what you could potentially do in year four, or in this instance, year five. And in Chris's early seasons, we had three total elite games. Two of those were bowl games. And I can get into a long diatribe about why bowl production is very flawed and misleading. I do think you need to question how good he was in the first place. Now, I do know he dominated some practices for LSU. I know that. Everyone knows that. He wouldn't have been invited to SEC Media Days if Brian Kelly didn't think he was truly something. Okay? But we've got to see what we can get out of a vertical passing attack. And I do think we need to chunk some deep balls to Chris. Were there some opportunities to do that versus Florida? Yes, there were some on film. Some of which were part of what I like to call a clear out route, which is you're the vertical guy that draws coverage. And there's always room for the vertical clear out guy. In fact, that is far more common in the NFL than you would think, that some receivers that are in the NFL really aren't the best receivers that are there. They're just the guys that are really fast, can catch the occasional vertical ball, and stretch out the defense. And Chris is the best on this team at doing that. So he still should play. It's just, I understand the targets aren't where they need to be for him to have the success. The role has been kind of strange. But it's also important that nobody on this team is where we expected them to be on offense. In fact, the only player on this offense that you can remotely come close to saying has exceeded expectations is actually two players, Braylon Moore and Xavion Thomas. Those are the only two. Everyone else has been at about expectation. Aaron Anderson's a good example. He's producing like how he produced last season, which is very, very, very good. But no one's done anything out of the norm just yet or outrageously outstanding just yet. We're on the defensive side of the football. Bernard Gooden has been as better than advertised, as has Mansoor Delane. Wes Weeks has also been very good. I will say, yes, on almost every team, there is that rare like year four, year five, later breakout that didn't have an early year of actual good production. Wes Weeks actually fills that void. He actually fills that rarity. It's so hard to have a late breakout. You would think it's the opposite because you're older than everyone. It does make it a little bit easier if you have that much experience. But Wes Weeks is playing so good. Not Witt. Witt obviously is very good. Wes is playing really, really, really well. So obviously he's dealing with the minor hiccup here. Man, it would be nice to not lose him because he really has been that good, number 33 for LSU. Okay. We say hi to Sourdough Man. Okay. James. A coach getting fired for slapping a player. No, I don't agree. Oh. So you don't think Jabbar Jalouk should be fired? I don't out of all the controversial things that we've had to discuss on this channel, I really do think that's a pretty open and shut case. I think that's just common sense. Like, think about it this way. If you were to slap just any individual in public, you might be getting arrested, right? Like, or you're at least getting kicked out of the establishment or the building or wherever. We're talking about an associate head coach. I could be maybe a little bit more lenient if he was a younger coach. It's not really debatable to me. Okay? Like, it's really not. If I'm Brian Kelly, I'm saying, look, you don't come into my house and do that. Uh-uh. So here's what James says. What happens in a locker room should stay there. Who's going to tell him? Huh? Like, it's funny. I've seen some people, like, actually, and James, I'm just singling you out. I've seen other people defend this as if you're defending Nick Saban here. Or actually a good running backs coach like Frank Wilson. It's like you're defending a bad coach. That's the funny thing about this. It didn't happen in a locker room though, James. Sorry to break it to you. It happened pregame in 4K. It's like the what's his name? Our Juice World, Mark Phillips skit with the lawyer. We caught you in 4K, bro. In 4K. Oh, man. You should never do that. Okay. Now, I will say, you do it to your own player, that's a little bit different. You do it to your own players that you still should probably get fired. But doing it to your own player, that could be your relationship with that player. Like some parents and players don't mind a player getting coached that hard, but I can understand like a little shake up getting right in his face, but slapping another individual. Sorry. Can't get there. Okay. So James is like in 4K. Well, he's done. No, this was not a locker room skirmish. This was him slapping another player on the opposing team. Okay. Now, next thing. I do think this is a big, big, big weekend in college football in the SEC. I will say this past weekend in the SEC is one of the best SEC weekends I can remember just on the Tennessee-Georgia game alone. That is one of the best college football games I've ever witnessed. And then you have Texas A&M going on the road and beating Notre Dame. And yeah, the Vanderbilt upset, it was a great, great, great weekend in the Southeastern Conference. What I will tell you is two different things. It is so refreshing to not have that dominant Alabama force that we, you know, a lot of us can admit now, we knew going into it we were probably going to lose. But at the same time, there are more losable games on our schedule. Okay. A lot of the teams that we have coming up, obviously South Carolina is fraudulent. Ole Miss's defense stinks. So we get those teams in the next couple of weeks. I could make a strong case that those two teams are the easiest SEC teams we have left. You can make a strong case that Arkansas was better than Ole Miss in that game. But I can also tell you that we don't have the offense to exploit what they have defensively based on what we've seen up to this point. But at the same time, none of the defenses that are left on our schedule, maybe outside of Oklahoma, maybe outside of Alabama, none of those defenses should scare you. Okay? None of them should, if you can get something going versus Southeastern and Ole Miss. You should score no less than 30 points in both of those games. That's how bad Ole Miss's defense looked. Arkansas put up an easy 35. So there you go. Flicking beans. That could mean a lot of different things. Well, welcome to the channel. Bruin CJ, welcome. Yeah, please hit the like button, all that good stuff. Now, I do also want to get into one key LSU note as far as what's next for Brian Kelly as a coach. Is it a make or break playoff season for him? Well, if he's able to beat Ole Miss in South Carolina, which he will be favored in both games to do so, I don't know, Ole Miss might be a slight favorite. It's going to be interesting seeing what that line's going to be. Ole Miss has Tulane this weekend at home with Trinidad Chambliss at quarterback. You should be in a good spot to make the college football playoff if you're able to beat Ole Miss in South Carolina. I do think a 9-3 LSU team, you would need some luck. Obviously, if LSU goes 10-2, they will make the college football playoff relatively comfortably, more than likely. That gets you in. So that's one way of looking at it. You beat Ole Miss in South Carolina, then you are in a fascinating spot with the rest of the schedule. You can lose to Vanderbilt and Texas A&M, win the Final Four, and you're still in. That would be mighty sweet. Okay. Now, I want to get into the news of the day. I was going to save this for our guest, but I want to get my thoughts on this first. They are fixing the transfer portal window. All right. So this news, and the reason I was going to wait is because this news is like festating as we do this live stream. Okay, let's see. Let me get the latest on this. The spring transfer portal window is being eliminated per Matt Zenitz. And we are shifting to a single portal window in the fall. Okay. Now, how do I feel about that? I hate it. I think a spring window would be better than a fall window. It just depends on where that fall window actually falls. Coaches want a single window because they don't want to lose any players from the roster that they're already setting up for the next year. The reason why I prefer a spring window is that it puts that much more pressure on your fall window to get your roster set for the next year. All right, so imagine if there was no spring window, you wouldn't have A.J. Halsey and you wouldn't have Bernard Gooden. Well, we wouldn't be where we are without those two. It's just pretty simple. Could we still be 3-0? Yeah, we would probably still be 3-0, but that's pushing it. And that's how good those two guys have been. A single window, coaches like, because organizationally it does make things better. And obviously it hurts the players because you don't have as much freedom as you once did. But the thing is, so much can change from the fall window to the spring window. Another thing, taking away the spring window, it further devalues spring football to me. Because the good thing about the spring window is the LSU coaches were able to look and say, we need to go get another safety. And Kyle Williams was like, hey, we need to go get Bernard Gooden. Now, I do not like my defensive tackle room. So you lose a critical eval period. So there you go. If he wants, I could think we could do it. We could bring Cooper back on. It's funny. Just quickly, so for those that don't know, Cooper is a national analyst for CBS Sports, and he made his first PHL appearance. We're going to have him on again pretty soon. And when I tell you, and I'm not just saying this because Cooper and I have been friends for a long time, his older brother and I were actually really close friends early in our LSU in our LSU dorm rooms. Like I did a why did it do a thumbs down? I didn't even do a thumbs down. That was a thumbs down for Jansen. But I know I always say, hey, go back and listen to this. It's hard to go back and listen and consume the hours of LSU content. If you miss me for a week, you're probably missing 10 plus hours of PHL content, including the Patreon. But if there was one interview you should go back and listen to, it is with Cooper, because it is evergreen, meaning that a lot of the stuff he had to say has value even a year from now. He actually does star rankings for 247. So one of the hardest jobs to do in the entire industry is rank these kids, okay? And Cooper knows the GMs. He knows he's just really plugged in as well. Y'all, I cannot state enough how tough it is to manage a roster, okay? It is so hard to make a board and figure out who's going to go where. These are 18 to 22-year-old kids. And oftentimes, you're making educated guesses on how this player might blossom when the season actually comes around, okay? Good example here. We shared it last night. Weston Davis had a tough spring. He had some good days, as do all players. If you're a power four player, you're not going to suck every day of practice because you're something, right? You wouldn't be there if that wasn't the case. But more often than not, he had some tough days. Spring game happened. Jack Pyburn had him in a blender. Well, Jack's one of the better defensive ends in the SEC. So that makes you go, well, it could just be that he's going up against our defensive ends. Well, LSU said, look, we don't need another offensive lineman from the portal. We already gotten two. Also, offensive linemen are the fewest, and Cooper can attest to this. It's one of the most scarce positions in the portal. It makes sense in theory, but it's also something that makes sense in real life as well. So with a spring and fall window, roster management becomes so key. So I'm about to say something really reckless, and it could honestly happen in a theoretical sense. But if I'm LSU, and let's just say LSU say, hey, Carter, We like your channel. We know you would give up everything in the world to come work for us. What role would you like to take with our team? And as much as I love film study and breaking down games, it would probably be over my head. What I would probably want to do is scout other collegiate players to see if we would want to go spend the money to bring them in to our school. Okay. How good are those players? Is it worth us going to spend what we need to spend to bring them in? Okay. Now, the guy that I would attack, and this is more an off-season thing, but if we're only going to have one window, if I am in need of a true X wide receiver, I would be calling Cam Coleman's agent right now. I don't think people quite understand how good this guy is. Okay? He's just been with quarterbacks that don't fit him. Peyton Thorne sucked last year. Jackson Arnold is a runner. He is a running back playing quarterback. Cam Coleman, in a semi-decent system, would feed generations. That's how good that dude is. Oklahoma better be ready this weekend, man. Cam Coleman is a freaking beast. So, if I was working the phone lines, I'm saying, look, who's Cam Coleman's agent? I'll pay you a milli to come be our ex next year, and we're not taking you off the field. Could you imagine Cam Coleman on the LSU offense? Well, it wouldn't mean anything. We wouldn't be able to hold up to give him time to get downfield. But I don't know. Maybe Chris Gordy, our guest coming up next, would tell me otherwise. But I am dropping a million on Cam Coleman to get if I'm Oklahoma, I'm dropping it. If they run it back next year, could you imagine? That's what Oklahoma's missing, dude. Deion Burks is good. Could you imagine Cam Coleman with freaking John Mateer? Are you kidding me? My favorite SEC podcasts are up next. Let's go.
Power Hour Network listeners and viewers, you might be consuming this content with that crick in your back that you've been trying to get rid of for so long. Take this as your sign today to book your appointment with LaboardTherapy.com. In the Lafayette region, there is no one that you will find that cares more about any different type of pain that you might have than the team at LaboardTherapy.com. Book today. Once again, that's LaboardTherapy.com, or you can visit one of their five locations all throughout the Lafayette region.
All right, I'm about to get my next guest in trouble. He was my mentor at LSU Student Media. So it's funny, we had Cooper Patania in here. I gave Cooper his first job. Gordy was obviously a huge influence in my student media career. Chris, before you say anything else, I think the role on this screen right here is your role. The SEC is actively looking for an executive to be its czar of football. Would you leave Locked On SEC to take that position?
Depends. So I have to move to Birmingham. I really don't want to live in. Really don't want to live in Birmingham. I nominate Nick Saban. I think he'd be great for that. So, no, I mean, you know,
you would do so good. You would do so good.
All I'm asking for, Carter, is a damn AP vote, because when we got what's her face last week telling us, who really even cares anyway? I'm like, how about me, who watches at least 12 to 13 games a week, who gives a damn? Look, I got a little SEC bias, but I'll call it like it is. Look, yeah. I got Ohio State, the number one team in the country right now. So, like, I'll be unbiased, but, like, it never made sense to have AP voters be a beat writer at a school that is at the stadium covering that one team all night, all day, all night, and not watching the other games. Like, why are they voting on games they didn't watch? So
it drives me nuts, dude. I was actually gonna wait for you to bring up the AP poll thing as well. So I was in an LSU press box once, and I saw an AP poll voter filling out his poll. And I asked him, I was like, hey, is this you filling out your poll? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, oh, did you see any of these other games? He's like, no, I'm just guessing. I'm just looking. He was literally just looking at box scores. Because, you know, he had to fill it out. He said, I'm flying overnight to go where I need to go. I'll text you later who it was. And this guy actually cares about it. Like, it's just unfeasible if you're a beat reporter.
And maybe that was just a one-off thing. Maybe he does pay attention more other weeks. But, like,
okay, yeah.
I just – and I've had people tell me, like, oh, okay, well, you'll have, like, an LSU beat writer with one because – they're going to be biased to LSU, but then you'll have a USC beat writer. They're going to be biased to you. And in any way, it would all balance out. But I just feel like this with the College Football Playoff Committee. I feel like this with the Heisman vote. And I feel like this with the AP vote. Like, it's got to be people who are doing their damnedest to watch the most games every week. When I talk to guys like Cole Kublik, I know Cole's calling a game on the sideline on Saturday night. You know what he does the first thing he gets home Sunday morning? He goes back and watches film of all the other games. He puts out a tweet with his takeaways from every SEC team every Monday morning. I mean, it's just like, that is like, you should be making an effort to do everything. I know a guy who has a Heisman vote who used to be a writer. He retired from writing. He still has a Heisman vote. I don't know why. Like, why are we keeping a guy who is retired still active with a Heisman vote? He doesn't work. He's sitting on his beach. Like, those things are just crazy to me, but I digress. I just think, you know, people who actually give a damn and put in the effort instead of a girl saying, and it's a bad look for females too. Like,
dude, it's the worst.
We know so many, like, from our time coming up in media to where, I mean, there's tons more females now, and rightfully so.
That actually care, yeah.
But this girl's going to give a bad name because I saw people besmirching it. Oh, you know, doing typical whatever, you know, caveman stuff. But, like, it's just like, how about you give a damn about your job? Like, it literally, it's like, it's the Gen Z mentality right now. It's like, can I half-ass it? I'll half-ass it and get paid. Let's do that.
Oh, wait, do you get paid to put in an AP vote every week, or is it just?
Well, I'm just, no, probably not. But I'm okay, just saying, yeah, like, yeah. It's your, if your job is the writer.
Right.
And by the way, like, there's probably like four or five people that write for her outlet. She's going to be the only one with the vote. You know what I mean? Like, because I remember Leah Van mentioned when she was writing Baton Rouge, somebody, I forget who it was, one of the longtime writers of Baton Rouge retired, and they handed it to her. And I remember her even saying at the time, like, this is a big responsibility. I'm taking this seriously. And then when she left Baton Rouge, I think she lost it. But still, like, if you're going to do it, take it seriously.
Locked on SEC, Chris Gordy joins us. I have LSU power rated number 4 in the SEC. What say you?
It's probably about right. I was, you know, somebody was asking me earlier today, like, who are the best teams or who's your best teams in the country? And, you know, it's so hard even through 3 weeks because some teams have been tested, some haven't. You know, it's this other thing. Like, think of like Florida. Okay. They lose by a field goal to USF and then they lose to LSU last week throwing 5 interceptions. Still lose by 10. Yet people are laughing them off in this Miami game going, they have no chance. And I'm like, wait, what if Florida played Austin Peay and Marshall? Like,
right.
Now we'd be going, that's a top 10 team. So it's just like, do you want to be tested or do you not? So Ohio State to me right now, again, the win over Texas, every week goes by, Texas doesn't look as great offensively, but it is what it is. I think them, I think Penn State, and then whoever else. I think Georgia's there. I think LSU's there. I think Miami's there. Oregon's there. So, you know, that's kind of where we are. But I'll tell you this, because I had a friend after LSU beat Clemson was like, why isn't LSU number one? I said, dude, you don't want to be one. Like, this isn't the BCS time where you got to be number one and run the table. Like, who cares who's number one? I don't want number one. You're going to have the target on your back the next, you know, however long.
Caleb Banks still plays for Florida, and he still destroyed our faces this past weekend. And if Lagway just doesn't throw the game away, I mean, that game is just so tight. So I'm with you. I could easily see Florida give Miami some struggles this weekend. You know, for me, Chris, I love the way you have a good bird's eye view of everything. Now, this is, to me, the biggest thing that people really want to get decided is the transfer portal window. So they're trying to eliminate the spring transfer portal window. What are the pros and cons of that?
Well, I think didn't Matt Zenitz, like he just reported that.
Yeah, that it is eliminated.
They had kind of said they were the whatever it was, the preliminary discussions were, this is what the coaches wanted. Kirby said this from like the get go. Kirby Smart's like, yeah, this is too damn stupid. Like, we need one transfer portal. It's going to put a lot of pressure on teams in that 4 week span in December. Cause think of this now, Carter, in December. We've got early signing period, which is basically signing day now, the first week of December. Like, we can call it the early signing period. You're signing 95 to 98% of your players on that period. National signing day is the first week of December. This is coming out of, you know, if you're playing for an SEC championship, you're playing for an SEC championship and putting together your recruiting class. If you make the playoff, you're prepping for your playoff games. If you're hosting a playoff game, you're going right into it. And on top of it, you're going to be going into immediate roster management because you're going to have kids. Remember, like, the portal won't open until, what are they saying? Is it going to be like the first week of January, I think they said?
Yeah.
It's basically 10 days. But you're going to have kids making the announcements as soon as their season ends. So if I play at, I don't know, Mississippi State and we go 6-6, we lose the bowl, or let's say we go 5-7, we lose the Egg Bowl. The next morning after the Egg Bowl, I can announce my intentions on where I'm going. Hey, I'm going to enter the portal, and it'll be breaking news and all that. And then it'll basically be a four-week kind of talking behind the scenes with agents and, you know, DMs and all this kind of stuff until the portal officially opens. But the one portal makes it a lot more hectic, Carter, because it becomes does. You got to address all your needs. And on top of managing your guys that you have, like, what happens if, I'll just say like a hypothetical, let's say hypothetical, LSU gets to December, they play for the SEC championship, they lose it to Georgia, they're going to be hosting a playoff game the next week. And what happens if Caden Durham goes, you know what, coach, I'm going in the portal. And then Harlan Berry goes, you know what, I'm going in the portal too. You know what I mean? Like just saying a hypothetical, suddenly you're Brian Kelly, you're like, holy crap, we're about to lose our running back room. We got to go find some guys. And, you know, it's going to make it that much more dire. With the second portal, you could at least find a guy. If there was a position of need that you absolutely didn't address early on, you went, okay, we can get that guy there. This just, the one portal is just going to make things a lot more tight. But I understand it. The coaches want, they want roster management back. You know, I tell this story all the time. I remember going to Coach O's office. I want to say it was 16, 17, whatever that first year was where he became the full-time head coach. And Derek Panamsky was there. And they got on the wall three different depth charts. And it was like 2018, 2019, 2020. And it was showing all the different positions, offense and defense. And they had it mapped out. Okay, here's our quarterback for 18. Here's our quarterback for 19. Here's our O-line for 18. And you could map it out that way. You can't do that anymore.
No,
you can't look 3 years ahead and go, oh, that guy's going to be here for the next 3 years. So this at least gives some control back to the coaches that they know once that portal closes, that portal window in January, that the 10 days or whatever, boom, it's done. This is my roster. You know, you'll still have probably grad transfers and things like that. But at least this gives you some control over, I know what I have going into next season.
And it also involves a lot more guessing, right? The one thing about I couldn't imagine LSU without Bernard Gooden or some of these spring guys coming in. You better be right about your roster evals now. I want to bring up Arch. Just your overall thoughts on what's transpired there. I mean, everyone that is a diehard college football fan, which I would guess are the 160 people watching on all different platforms would say, yeah, I've seen the clips. It looks terrible. What would you do if you're Steve Sarkisian?
Well, I've talked to a couple people. And by the way, I don't know if you follow that website that tracks the EPA, but the fact he ranks dead last, 133 out of 133 among quarterbacks in EPA, I mean, that is that is atrocious. Like, I mean, you would literally do better starting Matthew Caldwell, your transfer from Troy, who's the backup, than Arch Manning. And it sounds crazy to say that the guy was the Heisman favorite coming into the season. But I've talked to multiple people who have said it's all mental with him right now. That, you know, okay, the shoulder thing, is there an injury there? Is there not? We don't know. They're not going to tell us. But I know watching some film from those games he started last year, the mechanics were fine.
Yeah,
he threw a beautiful deep ball. He's connecting with these receivers, and now all of a sudden he's inaccurate. And I got people going, "Oh, it's because he played at Newman." And I'm like, "No. He was good last year. Go watch the two games he started. I get it. It was Mississippi State and somebody else. Like
ULM.
It wasn't world beaters, but it was decent. He's playing more cupcakes now with Sam Houston State and UTSA or UTEP. Like these are teams that you should be looking like, you know, 400 yards or whatever. And so, yeah, I think it's a mental block. And look, the pressure of the world is on him wearing that name on the back, Manning, and all the hype and attention. And I'll tell you this, he said all the right things the last two plus years. I mean, every interaction with the media, he's mature. He's all this beyond his years. But I think it's gotten to him. And again, I've had several people say, this isn't like this is a five-star that just got on campus. He's been there. This is his third year. What's Sark been doing with development and, you know, like getting this kid ready for this moment? So I still believe in him. I think the talent's still there. I think he's going to be fine. I hope it starts this week against Sam Houston. Sam Houston's terrible. They're 0-3 and one of the worst teams in college football. He should look good this week. Then they get a bye week, and then they're at Florida. Again, what's Florida going to look like? I mean, that might be Billy Napier's swan song that week when they get to the Swamp. That might be his last game he coaches. But I think they're too good. Look, the defense is too good, too, from
Giddy.
Yeah. He's
Giddy.
Texas's defense is too good, and they have too many good offensive weapons. Jack Andrews and Ryan Wingo, all these different pieces.
They're Parker Livingstone.
Livingston. I mean, they're too good. And again, Arch has got the talent in there. He's just got to get through this mental block, whatever it is, and get him some easy throws. If I'm Sark, again, I go back to what throw do you like throwing the most? Like what play do you like the most? Let's open with that. Let's get you into a groove.
I want to talk about John Mateer. I'm trying not to get like too hype because I love doing Oklahoma film studies. I love doing them last year because I don't know about you, Gordy. Their fans are just awesome. Am I right or am I wrong about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's some of the cocky bunch in that group, yeah. But not as bad as Texas by far. And that's what I always have the hardest time arguing is like Oklahoma fans should have the cockiness. Like if the last 15 years in the Big 12, it was Oklahoma winning the Big 12. You're not Texas, like. Yeah, Texas is the one that carries the arrogance. They had the Longhorn Network, and they think they're God's gift to football. And Oklahoma's like, we're just trying not to suck again because we were very subpar last year. So, yeah, it's the turnaround has been night and day. We knew the defense was going to be good with Venables. You lose Danny Stutzman and Billy Bowman. They've replaced those guys, and the defense is flying around. But the offense is night and day different. They got a running back now. They got a quarterback who can run the offense. And what sticks out to me most, Carter, is – they play two cupcakes, but they put foot on the throat and said, we're killing you. Last week at Temple, they had every reason in the world to look lackadaisical in that game. And look, it's between an emotional win over Michigan and the SEC opener against Auburn. If they would have went and laid an egg and won 20-8 at Temple, we all would have went, totally get it, dude. You just emotional letdown. But they beat them, 40-3? Like, it was not even close. They were, while all these other SEC teams, LSU playing around with La Tech, last week, Auburn with South Alabama, we saw Georgia mess around with Austin Peay. Like almost every other SEC team's kind of let their guard down and kind of had a lackadaisical performance against a cupcake. But Oklahoma's not had that yet. And John Mateer has been awesome.
God, he's good.
And the more as much as I want to give Jackson Arnold and Auburn a chance this week, Carter, I think Oklahoma wins by double digits. I think they're gonna put their will on Auburn and say, we ain't messing around.
Let's go.
Think of this. Oklahoma won last year at Auburn.
They did.
Offense was putrid. So their offense is light years better now. The question now becomes, how good is Auburn's improvement? Look, Jackson Arnold's better than Peyton Thorne, but how much better? And I think Oklahoma's offense is 10 times better, whereas maybe Auburn's mainly only three times better.
Yeah. You know, it's fascinating to me because as, you know, an LSU supporter, we've had mostly a lot of success versus Oklahoma, but that is the most excited I've been about a game in the final week of the season. We'll talk about that obviously when we get closer to time, but for some reason, I think that's going to be the de facto playoff game.
I said I thought that could happen last year. I was a year early.
Yes.
I think there's a good chance LSU and Oklahoma are both 9-2 going into that game. And look, I know a lot of LSU fans are going to make that trip because it's like you never go to Norman, Oklahoma.
Never.
Yeah. And it'll be 4 years at least before you go back. But it's almost a little scary, though, because you really hope LSU could take care of business. Like, I can't imagine going to, because we know 10-2 gets you in the playoff.
Right.
9-3 is iffy this year. And I thought, oh, the win over Clemson's gonna be the one that gets them over the hump if they're 9-3. I don't know if they're gonna get credit for that win. Because if Clemson continues to suck, the committee's not gonna go, oh, you beat Clemson week one when they were preseason top 10. Turns out they're a 4-loss, 5-loss team.
And here's the thing, it's gonna be cold. And I don't know if LSU's gonna have a cold game before that. They could, though, versus a team that Chris Gordy, in the face of a super diehard Alabama fan, you said to Chris Marler that you're not as high on Alabama as others. And, well, you're right. I mean, you haven't been on since the Florida State debacle. But now we've had 2 weeks since then. I know it's their bye week. But has anything changed for you as far as them is concerned?
Yeah, I give them a lot more credit from what we've seen in the last 2 weeks. And I get it. Louisiana Monroe sucks, and Wisconsin's not great. But they dominated both those football games. And Bama looks like a different team. Ty Simpson has been lights out in those last two games at Bryant-Denny. And I think if you're an LSU fan that's been dancing on Alabama's grave, great. But you're going to wish and pray that game was in Tiger Stadium this year and not Bryant-Denny Stadium. It's tough to win there, man. I mean, LSU just – not just LSU, everybody. Tough to win there. And I get Saban's gone, and DeBoer's not Nick Saban, but, brother, that team looked pretty damn – like, the last 2 weeks, they look like the preseason top 10 team that everybody thought Alabama was going to do. Everybody danced in their grave after Florida State, and I get it. They deserved it. But they responded, and they look much better. Look, I still think they're going to lose at Georgia next week. But that's a team, they've had their number. Like, they, for whatever reason, it's Kirby, you know, in his mind. He cannot be. Last year, with Saban gone, they should have beat that team. And look, they dug themselves a monster hole. Carson Beck throwing interception after interception after interception. But they came back. They made it a game. They came close. Ryan Williams did Ryan Williams things. But we'll see where both programs are when we get to that game. Of all years for it to be in Tuscaloosa, you wish that game was in Baton Rouge because I think they're going to give LSU some fits.
Last one, with all of LSU's offensive troubles, I mean, and it's been putrid. You know, we're talking about Arch and EPA. LSU as a team, is their EPA numbers aren't too great either. Do you still see this team potentially as a playoff team with the offense being the way that it is?
Yeah, they're too talented on offense. I believe BK when they look. I think they looked at that film, Carter, and said, "Oh gosh, they're getting Caleb Banks back. He lived in our backfield last year. They sacked the crap out of Nussmeier. Let's not even give them a chance to do that. We're gonna try to establish that run." Whether we're running into a wall on every play, we're going to try to establish that run. And I think LSU, just as the game was unfolding, Carter, I was there at Tiger Stadium. I never felt like Florida was in danger of beating it. Like, I thought LSU was going to have to make a major mistake for Florida to be able to win that game. And they didn't. They protected the football. And the fumble or the interception by Nussmeier late was silly. But I just feel like this offense has too many weapons for them not to get going with Nick Anderson, with Kyle Parker, with Xavier Thomas, Aaron Anderson, Chris Hilton. I mean, I think they almost owe it to the fans to air it out this week and throw some deep balls.
Yes.
And again, the torso injury to Nussmeier, whatever the hell it is, I still keep saying this. If he's hurt, don't play. It's Southeastern.
Oh, so you're in that camp. You
it's think Southeastern. You can start Mike. Look, Van Buren needs to get some playing time, because if Nuss does get hurt in an SEC game, you don't want to be South Carolina right now throwing your hands up and going, Luke Doty ain't got a chance in hell to win this game for us because Lenora Sellers is out. You went and paid big money for Michael Van Buren to come in because he has experience last year in Mississippi State. I'd like to see him get some snaps this game. So what does that mean? Either you don't play Nuss at all, you give him the week off. Because what did Brian Kelly say? He's like, when we get to the bye week, he's going to be fine. He just needs a week off. Give him a week off here. What are we doing? Unless the thought process is you don't want him to go in cold at Ole Miss. Okay, whatever. He's a, you know, what, a fifth-year quarterback. Like, he should be fine going into Ole Miss, not having not played. But it made me think back to 07. Matt Flynn gets banged up. Didn't Ryan Perilou start against Middle Tennessee State? Like, it was...
Yeah, he started the Tennessee game. It might have been another one earlier.
I thought it was Middle Tennessee, but whatever. Like, there's a game like that. This is a game like that. This is a game that you're LSU. You can start Michael Van Buren this week and win. If Nuss needs a full week off to rest up, then let him rest up. You know, again, if this is about padding stats and trying to chase a Heisman, what the hell with that? We're trying to win a championship. And if you're going to tell me Nuss is going to go into the Ole Miss game not 100%, we're going, well, you just need to get that bye week. No, you need to beat Ole Miss. You just do. You've lost the last couple times you've gone there. You got to go beat their ass while they're in a transition mode. Their defense stinks this year. Pete Golding is looking around for answers. So, again, that's where I am on it. If you do play them a couple series, score some touchdowns, and get them out by halftime. It should be all Van Buren in the second half.
Man, there's so many other players I want to discuss with you, but I value your time so much. If you want to learn more about Talen Green, who's playing amazing, you want to learn more about Diego Pavia, who we did not discuss, that's why you go to Locked On SEC. Go follow Chris Gordy on Twitter. And Greg Sankey, if you're watching this, I do think you're looking at the czar. But he said he don't want to move to Birmingham.
No.
But Chris Gordy.
I'll take the paycheck, but...
Yeah, of course.
By the way, Locked On SEC tomorrow, we will have Sam Acho joining us. We'll talk some Arch Manning with him. And then slated for Friday, the GOAT, Tim Tebow, is supposed to come on. So I'm going to tell him you called his cell phone that week in 07.
Yes, it was me. I was one of them that called. I didn't get in early enough. I was one of the...
He changed his number by the time you called him.
No. For those that don't know, Tebow's number got passed around. This was like pre-TikTok. If TikTok was around during this, oh, my God. And his number got passed around. And everybody on LSU's campus was calling him. And I got a voicemail box is full. I wasn't able to speak my mind before the game. That's a pretty daggum tasty guess right there. Timothy Tebow, man, that's awesome, man. Are you obviously you've interviewed big names before at SEC Media Days, but do you get nervous when you're talking to one of the best college football players of all time?
I will say though, I've had a chance to talk to him, interview him in person too. He is one of the most genuinely kind human beings ever. He and Sam Acho can drop Bible verses on you all day. Like, I'd love to see them go toe to toe going like, yeah, but Matthew 5, you know, like they could do that like all day long, but they're two genuinely nice dudes and they're doing stuff with Allstate and the good work schemes and all that. But no, Tebow is the real deal, man. Like, for anybody who, look, I know a lot of LSU fans crapped on him when he was, you know, rightfully so. Like, he was Jesus, he was incredible. But no, he's a good dude. And so it's gonna be a fun interview. And curious if he's got any solutions on, you know, how to fix Florida. I just, everybody I've talked to said Billy Napier does not survive this year at this point. Like, it's a matter of when, not if, he'll be fired.
Especially if you got, you know, your coaches slapping other players. It's still insane to me. Here's one thing I'll say about Tim Tebow. And look, I'm not saying he was better than Joe Burrow or Johnny Manziel or anyone. He is still the biggest college football star of this era.
Yeah, I mean, him, Reggie Bush, those are the first two that come to mind, you know, when you think like Heisman House and all that. Vince Young's up there just because of what he did that season for Texas. But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, what was wild to me, Carter, is I brought this up to somebody. I was at Super Bowl Radio Row, and at one point, my table where I'm sitting at, the table across from me, I think was NPR or something. They had Joe Montana at their table. Not one soul came over. Not one soul looked at him. Didn't give a damn. Yet when Shador Sanders walked in, he had an entourage of about 30 people following him, security, people snapping photos, move out the way, excuse me. And I'm like, what the heck happened? And then that parallels to the last Saturday at Tiger Stadium. I'm walking around on the field pregame, and who's the guy, iShow Speed or whatever?
Yes.
YouTube star. I don't know who the hell the guy. I don't know.
You don't know Speed?
I felt old for the first time in my life, Carter. I'm like, I didn't know who the hell this kid is. He's got a whole, like, 8 security guys around him. People are screaming. Like, I think women are throwing, you know, articles of clothing at him. Like, he's this superstar. And trailing behind him, with nobody with him, was Leonard Fournette. And I'm going, how is Leonard Fournette walking around the field in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and not getting the superstar treatment? It's just, it's crazy to me.
I wish people understood how big iShow Speed is. It was the same thing at like, in any kind of like festival. He's always got the biggest thing. And part of it is because he's always live when he's out in public. So, you know, there's some people that are trying to get their clout just being
what's his talent? Like, what's he known for?
He's just a streamer. Like he's just a high energetic streamer.
But like he's not like a former athlete, he's not like an actor anything.
That's the weirdest thing. So he's not like he's young. Like he got famous pretty quickly, like 18, 19. He's not a former athlete, but he's fast as hell. Like he's raced all these other influencers. He's not lost yet. He beat that Ashton Hall guy who has the Saratoga water. So like I think he's raced some other athletes and beat them.
It's just one of those things that like, had they come over and been like, hey, we can get you a one-on-one interview with him, I would have been like, I don't even know what to talk to him about. Like, no, I'm good. I'll pass.
But if he would have had you on history, I guarantee you would have 1,000 followers in a minute.
Probably.
Right? That's how, like, it's in like him and Kai Cenat, their streams, dude. It's freaking.
Is the other guy Mr. Beast? Isn't he like the big?
Yeah, but that's
follower.
Yeah, that's just like YouTube. He just does YouTube. He's not in the live stream kind of Twitch game. I will say Mr. Beast is I don't know. Have you ever watched one of a Mr. Beast video?
No, I don't even know what he looks like. I just know the name.
Oh, you know Jimmy?
I live in my sports bubble, Carter. I'm watching film. I'm, you know.
That's my problem. That's my problem is like I've gotten into a few things outside of the world of sports, and but yeah, Mr. Beast is insane. Chris Gordy, Locked On SEC, check him out, and we'll talk to you in about a month, man.
All right, thanks, Carter. Appreciate it, man.
I really do think he should be the czar. I'm serious. You see how much he freaking loves this league? I love the SEC. If they wanted to hire me to do it, sure. I have an SEC channel. Now, mine's just different than Chris Gordy's channel. My dog wants out. Let me take care of this, and then we'll take a few more questions. You didn't even go. Oh, my God, dude. I just recognized something. I just recognized something. So I was like, man, it's starting to get a little warm in here. Our air conditioning's out again. Oh, my God, dude. This is a big difference between men and women. Is women have different levels of temperature than men do. Men don't like it to be like hot in the house, but we could deal with some warmth. Women needed to be the frozen tundra. When they go to sleep, they got to have 20 fans going on at the same time. It's got to be sub-zero. You got to be able to hang some beef upside down by a hook. And then when it's time to shower, never shower with your significant other. Don't do it. Because women have the water on boiling. They don't care if it melts your skin off. But, man, we just want the water warm. It's just two different extremes. Men are never in the extreme in the cool and hot debate. Women, if it's not freaking Antarctica, if Elsa's not singing Let It Go in the background, but our air's out again. Man. Yeah. Andrew, thank you. Share it on Facebook, please. Good to see you. Yeah, Mr. Beast. I don't know how Gordy doesn't know what Mr. Beast looks like. It's kind of crazy. But that's why I think Gordy should be the czar, because he is such a focused guy. It's part of my problem. Now, I do have some good news at the end of the stream. In the next 5 to 10 minutes, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. If you super chat, we'll keep it going. We do have an announcement tomorrow on PHO. Pretty excited about it. You know, I was always looking to bring in new partners. And if you want to partner with us and grow your brand or your business, please shoot me an email, powerhourlsu@gmail.com. Another thing, as far as my film reviews are concerned, I still get messages about where did I play and where did I coach. When I tell you that the film reviews I do, Do I think I have a very good amount of ball knowledge? Yes. But if you were to actually sit in on a coach's seminar, it's a completely different thing. They're going to be speaking Egyptian hieroglyphics. We never go through play calls, like the actual calls themselves, 62 Y right, ace left, whatever. So, yeah, and I'll let it be clear. Anytime I do a film review, I don't know the play calls. I don't know how it's instructed in the huddles. I don't know how it's instructed in-game or any of that. These are all my educated guesses. It's never a black and white thing. Okay? And then the second disclaimer that I always share in film reviews is that nothing is personal. Nothing is ever personal. If I say a player is not doing well or struggling, you know, It's not personal. It just is what it is. You know, like it's not, especially on the LSU side of things, I want every player to succeed. Okay. Roasting. Yeah, you gotta be careful. Super long dogs, super long field goals. I think that's what you meant. Why not have a tall player at the goalpost to block it if it's close? I don't know. If it's like a 68 yarder. And the kickers are so good, though. Like, how many kicks do you actually see that are kicked so low that it could be swatted? All right, y'all. That'll do it for me. Do wants a 12-hour stream. I'm down. I could do it. Oh, you're talking about speed. Ah. Cooper brought up Eli Holstein. Oh, you love the backdrop? It'll be something different tomorrow. Yeah, exactly, Chance. Like, dude, you can't, like, it's actual violence. I mean, Yeah, we'll do a Peyton Houston film study at some point. I just don't, you know, I don't want to spend too much time on it because, you know, I could change. All right, big thanks to our friends. Once again, at Labord Therapy, labordtherapy.com, L-A-B-O-R-D therapy.com in the Lafayette region. Please, please, please go support them. One message that they did send is don't let that pain get too severe, especially if you're my age. Okay. We're to that point where we just can't let it go. Go see the professionals, labordtherapy.com, and let them know PHL sent you. I give you a little extra off, okay? It is Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight, we are doing Slamming Salmon, baby. Let's... Oh, yeah, no super chats tonight. That's okay. Let's go. Let's go.